Well, I wonder how many of you get interrupted during the day. You might be at home, and the telephone rings, or there's a knock at the door right in the middle of your favourite TV show. Maybe you're hurrying around Waitrose, there's someone in every aisle you know, or down at the post office, and there you are face to face with someone, and you're in a hurry, and it all comes pouring out. How easily can you let go of your own plans, give the person you're facing or who's on the other end of the line your undivided attention, the dignity they've been deprived of perhaps, or the attention they desperately need? Of course, there are pointless interruptions that irritate us and interruptions that successfully solicit our attention. I'm just amazed on those few occasions that I use social media, just how quickly there's a post of someone who likes it, or a comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. It appears that we're very willing to be interrupted, but on our own terms, and so long as we think we're in control. Heineken, the brewer, set up a ringing payphone on the street to see how many people would answer it. Those who did were offered an invitation to cross the street to an arts venue, but thousands walked the other way, few answered the phone, and only five crossed the street to join a famous artist on stage for, and I quote, a legendary experience. This morning's text begins, "While he was saying this." We seem to be still at Matthew's house, and Jesus has just answered the questions of the disciples of John. In Matthew's account, the words and actions of Jesus here in these eight verses, we find Jesus being interrupted not once, but twice. The first request is about as serious as it gets. And the second, in Jesus' hierarchy of values, just as much so. There's a very real dilemma here. Well, there might be for you or I if we were in the same situation. Two things come to mind. The first has to do with the authority that Jesus has and has given us, and the second, that God's sovereignty is over time and the timing of these competing demands. That God is sovereign will result in glory to him, even when from a human perspective it seems unlikely. So first, authority. The ruler kneels before Jesus. As a person with power and authority in the community, he recognizes Jesus possesses a different authority to that which he has. It's remarkable that he recognizes not just Jesus' superiority, but that he has divine authority over life and death. Matthew, unlike the writers of the other synoptic gospels, is short on the details, but cuts through the unnecessary to make his point. Unlike the account of Jesus and the centurion in the previous chapter, who recognizes the power and authority of Jesus' words and recognizes his own unworthiness, he says to Jesus, "Just say the word and my servant will be healed." This ruler asks Jesus to touch his daughter. Somehow or other, this ruler has come to recognize the contagious power of holiness that Jesus possesses is able to make all the difference. Those who watched the recent Panorama program following a British doctor who went to serve in an Ebola treatment center in West Africa will not have failed to recognize the huge significance of touch both in the spread of this epidemic and in the care of those infected. There was one remarkable example of how a young child cared for his younger siblings and, in spite of the risks to his own well-being, while almost certainly not understood by him, was one of those who overcame the virus. I know nothing about that little boy, but I do know that the power of holiness is more powerful than even the Ebola virus. We talk about the grapevine. Well, there's one in the village, but there was clearly some grapevine at work here in Galilee, such that people were getting to hear about Jesus and their expectations were growing that he would exercise his divine authority to bring life and health. What are our expectations of the power of holiness and the authority of Jesus? The second issue is time. You know that African saying, you English people have watches but no time. We Africans have no watches and plenty of time. The differing accounts of this instance shouldn't trouble us. On the way to the ruler's house, Jesus is interrupted. This time, it's by a woman with a gynecological problem. That, in Levitical law, would have meant that the woman, this young woman, was ostracized for her continuous ritual impurity. She would have been unmarriable and a burden to her family. She expects that the touch of Jesus will change her life completely. So note that Jesus is complying with the same Levitical law in as much as he wears a robe with fringes that signify the commands of God and a reminder to walk in them. Do we, like Jesus, live our lives mindful of his commandments? And are we hoping to touch Jesus but not expecting any change in our lives? Jesus' response to her is remarkable. He knows that faith has been exercised in that simple touch, and he turns to give her more than healing that she's just received by saying, "Daughter, be encouraged." By saying that, he restores her dignity, her worth, and her prospects for a fulfilled life, and addresses her worst fears. Hope is restored. We know that some of the disciples were impatient to hurry Jesus along. And yet, in the midst of a crowd, he has the sensitivity to know something significant is going on. The touch of the woman is complemented by the words of Jesus that bring wholeness. When we're interrupted, we may be thinking about what we'll lose, whether that's time or money, the thing we were expecting, whatever. In this interruption, although Jesus feels the power go out of him, nothing is lost. It's impossible in the economy of God to give and not have more left over. Jesus is not less every time he heals and forgives. And one of the biggest tests of faith we have is to believe that in the ordinary interruptions of our daily lives, that when we respond with the compassion of Christ, we too can restore dignity or hope, bring healing or freedom from fear, and not be any the less for being interrupted. Amen.